Our next guest is the renowned poet J. Chester Johnson. He is a critically acclaimed poet, essayist, and translator of over four decades. He's also been active in the civil rights movement. He served in President Jimmy Carter's Treasury Department, had a distinguished career in public finance, and played a major role in the retranslation of the Psalms contained in the Episcopal Church's Book of Common Prayer. In his latest work, perhaps one of the most significant nonfiction works, is entitled Auden, A-U-D-E-N, Auden, The Psalms and Me. Poet J. Chester Johnson is up next. Poet J. Chester Johnson, what a pleasure to have you on the show today.
No, the pleasure is mine. Thank you very much, Ed.
You know, I loved poetry when I was a kid, and it was always my favorite in high school because we were getting into some really good stuff. But poetry doesn't get its fair amount of attention. How do more people reconnect with poetry? If you could recommend to them, should we go back to the stuff that we loved? Should we be picking up stuff from right now and just go in, you know, without any hesitation at all? Let's get poetry back. What's the easiest way?
Well, I think one of the easy ways of doing that is think of the language that matters to oneself. I mean, is it, you think about the scriptures, you think about the Old Testament, the New Testament, a lot of that language is poetry. And also remember those things that you resonated to when you were young. I mean, whether it was a Walt Whitman song of Myself, or whether it was a couple of lines of Shakespeare, or whether there were little couplets that you learned. You know, there's a certain fear of poetry now that is very unfortunate. It's as though there's been a divorce from poetry, and maybe the poets are to be blamed for that to some extent. But it is such a life force. It's the way in which we speak the best. And it's too bad. You're exactly right. There's just not the mainstream love of poetry that I certainly think that there should be. But those are things that I tell people when they ask me, well, you know, what can I do? I love some of your stuff. But I have some resistance to some other. And I just tell people, let your own resonation into these words carry you. What were the words and the lines that meant to you, that meant so much to you when you were younger?
You know, I think the other beautiful attribute of poetry that would seem to have a place in 2017, more prominent, more accessible in the pop culture, is that when we would read poems aloud in class and finally get the punctuation right and finally get the declarative sentence structure in as well as the recitation of the words, there was a way that a poem was said. And spoken word seems to have a lot of popularity. There's certainly the growth of rap music revolving around wordplay, word use, wordsmithing, a word I love, right? We used to have wordsmiths once upon a time.
Right.
It does seem to fit. It does seem to have exactly what it takes these days in terms of content, poetry does as an art form.
No, I agree with you, and I guess that's why I make the point, as I did earlier, about if it is rap music, if it is, I mean, just think about it. Bob Dylan just won the Nobel Prize for Literature. And you know that, and his poetry is in the sound of music. So I think let's not narrow what poetry may be. As a matter of fact, I applaud him for his work. I think his lyrics are so beautiful, and there's so much poetry in music today, and has been for so many years, and we should celebrate that. So let's just not have a narrow definition of what poetry may be, because as you indicate, the spoken word and also the sung word is present with us every day, and we ought to celebrate that without trying to confine it to iambic pentameter or confessional poetry or definitions that separate us from the words that resonate with us.
Absolutely. The latest work of yours, Auden, the Psalms, and Me. Tell us, what is Auden?
Well, there's a poet named W.H. Auden who was... he was a British poet who came to the United States back in the 30s and 40s, and made America his home and became a pretty celebrated poet. Then the Episcopal Church decided to go through a retranslation of its Psalms, and Auden, W.H. Auden, was appointed to the committee as the poet. And these Psalms, which it took 12 years to develop, the retranslation of these Psalms, he was on the committee for 3 years, but then he decided to go back to England, and I replaced W.H. Auden on that committee.
Oh.
And I served on the committee for 8 years, but then he died a couple of years after he left New York, but he and I continued to communicate, and he had very strong views about what should be done in terms of using these poems, which were Psalms are poems. They were written as poems 2,500, 3,000 years ago. And so I replaced him. And this book is actually a story of the retranslation of the Psalms that are part of the Book of Common Prayer, with particular attention, because I'm a poet, I gave particular attention to W.H. Auden. And the communication that he and I had, and the role that he served on the committee, and one of the reasons it's important is I'm one of two surviving members of the drafting committee. There were, depending on any point in time, there were 7 to 9 members of the drafting committee. These Psalms have actually become a standard. Other worshiping groups have adopted these Psalms, these retranslated Psalms, for their own worship and service books. And since I was only one of two surviving members, a lot of people have asked me over many years to write this book. And I had sort of resisted it because I'm a poet. I don't write a lot of nonfiction. But this is This is nonfiction, and it's a history of that project and W.H. Auden's role, my role. It's the story of this retranslation of the 150 Psalms over a dozen years.
Now,
back in the 70s.
Just so I have the narrative right, the church itself said it's time for us to retranslate these, and that intention was to what? Modernize the language? What were they trying to do in retranslation?
Well, these Psalms came out of the Great Bible of 1540 in England.
Mm-hmm.
The Episcopal Church is the American branch of the Anglican Church. And then when King, the whole story of King Henry VIII, when he broke away from the Catholic Church and he created this church and the Anglican Church, and the Great Bible incorporated these Psalms that became part of the worship book of the Church of England. Now, there's been a lot of scholarship and a change regarding the way in which that translation of 1540 how accurate it is, and whether it really said what it meant to say. And a lot of the words now are obsolete. For example, a word like runagate, we don't know what that is, but he used that in that. And so there are a lot of words that were just obsolete, but more importantly, there were a lot of mistranslations. So after 400 years of having lived with this Book of Common Prayer with these mistakes in them, the church decided in 1967 to have a retranslation of these Psalms. And that's when the committee was set up. I wasn't an original member of it, but 3 years after they got started, I replaced the first poet who was on the committee. But that's the fundamental view, that there, over the 400 years since he did that retranslation, there's been the 400 years since 1540, there's just been a lot of recognition of different scholarship. There's been a recognition of mistranslations in those. And so we tried to correct, we went through, and we didn't make it all modern. We really tried to follow, because the person who did it, his name was Miles Coverdale, was really a poet himself. I mean, it's gorgeous. There's some gorgeous language in there. Actually, the King James Version of the Bible adopted most of all or relied very heavily upon the Psalms that were part of the 1540. So it has been carried through our history. His Psalms, the 1540 Psalms, have been carried through our history and our English-speaking history. But there were a lot of mistakes, so we tried to correct that, but keep the tone the same that he had. We tried to keep it as much as possible in the Elizabethan English that Miles Coverdale had portrayed in those Psalms in 1540.
Renowned poet J. Chester Johnson is on the line with me. This is an incredible story about the Book of Psalms, the Episcopal Church's Book of Common Prayer, the retranslation effort, which went on for an extended period of time, at 8 years altogether? Or is that your term?
12
total. 12. You served 12, for 8,
yes.
Right? You were 8.
Yeah, and I served for 8 years on the committee, yes.
And what is the first mechanical? Is this done like at a conference room table? Is this done in isolation and come together like, say, the Supreme Court? What is that process like when you join it? I mean, how are assignments given out? How does that? I mean, it's fascinating.
Oh, that's a fascinating question. Thank you for asking. Well, it was dominated by Old Testament scholars because, you know, we needed to make sure that whatever we wrote was accurate. So we had a lot of those. We had one poet, and the chairman of the committee he had knowledge of all the basic languages, ancient languages, the Hebrew, the Greek, and the Latin, and he would come out with the first draft. Again, relying heavily on the 1540 version, with the exception of where there were mistranslations or there was obsolete language and that sort of thing. And then we would meet every 6 months for about a week, and we would go over the drafts. I had prepared, after I was appointed, I went through like the 8 most respected translations of the Psalms in recent years, and I provided that information, just sort of background, so people could get a sense of the poetics of each of the various versions, just to make sure people were sensitive to the poetry that various versions represented. And then we would sit around the table. We would discuss the way in which what was accurate in the 1540 Bible, what wasn't, what needed to be changed, why did it need to be changed, and what were the options that we had in terms of making those adjustments that needed to be made. And then we would come up with a draft of each of the Psalms. We would circulate it among other scholars, primarily within the Episcopal Church, and get responses. There were 300 consultants, non-paid. Of course, these were just people doing this, Episcopalians, who were 300 consultants that would review our work. And then there was an overarching authority that was called the Standing Liturgical Commission,
right.
And they would accept or not reject or accept our commission, our work. But then that would be done, but we would revisit those. We would get comments from various parties on it. Then we would revisit it and go back through and make sure that either the poetry was right, or to make sure that both the poetry and the translations were correct and were done as well as possible. And it has it's really survived very nicely. And that's one reason that I was prevailed upon to write this book, because it's these psalms have been, as I said, become a standard. And there was a need to tell the story of how this retranslation occurred, and the manner in which poetry became an important element of the translation.
J. Chester Johnson is our guest on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network, AM/FM stations all across America. You know, I'm interested now thinking about you writing this nonfiction story, a narrative about somebody extremely important to you, someone that you've intersected with, worked with, been colleagues with over a period of time. But the skill of the nonfiction narrative is detail, lots of words, long storytelling. The poet is always the one who compresses, and it takes the ordinary words and compresses them into like diamonds and precious gems, and they come out in just so few syllables and just so beautifully. I wondered what it was like for you to have the one approach, then the other approach, and now after both, how this has informed you as a writer. You must be a lot more deft at this. You must love that you've been in both worlds.
Well, thank you for saying that. It was fascinating putting this together. I think that's the challenge of it is one reason that I resisted it for years in terms of putting this together, because I do consider myself a poet. I don't consider myself a nonfiction writer, although I have written articles here and there over the years. But it's totally a different discipline involved. But in many ways, I've tried to bring my poetry skills to the nonfiction piece, this book, because now I don't mean it in the sense of using the techniques, rhyme or rhythm or parallelism or any of that other stuff that people use sometimes when they're writing verse. What I meant was sharpness of language and communication of thought as concise as I could make them. And there is a relationship, obviously, between the two, because both of them are means. Poetry and nonfiction are meant to communicate both in their two disciplines. But I intentionally tried to bring to bear my poetry style and honesty and a little humor here and there and tightness of sentences in a way that would educate and communicate more effectively than my writing a very stale. I don't mean, people who normally write nonfiction, I don't mean they're always stale, but
right.
I wouldn't want to write it in such a way that it ends up being stale. And people who have read this book and have come back to me frequently and talked about the style that I include, as one critic called it, a sculpted style, which, you know, in other words, I spent a lot of time measuring out these words, measuring out the way in which one sentence related to another. And so I'm hopeful that the poetry skills, the more important poetry skills, actually surfaced within the book. And that was an intent on my part, a conscious intention on my part to do that.
You know, this is such a treat to have you on the program. It really is. The book is called Auden, The Psalms, and Me. J. Chester Johnson has been our guest. The website, easy enough, www.jchesterjohnson.com. You can also get a copy of the book at Amazon. You need to get the book to understand the story. And now the question becomes... are you being teased? Are you thinking about perhaps another nonfiction, or are you breathing that sigh of, well, I've done that, now let's get back to poetry?
I think it's more the latter. I might be teased in terms of adopting some prose and nonfiction as sort of setting the story for some, but mostly concentrating on the poetry. I feel more comfortable in that mode, but I don't know. I was a little intrigued by this, and it ended up being a lot more fun than I had originally thought it would be. As I said, I resisted it for a while, but it ended up being a lot more fun, and I'm glad I did it. And the response has been very positive, and thank you for having me.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have to say the same about your visit with us.
You
brought a lot of fun to poetry and the Psalms and this discussion, which I can, on the one hand, hear in my own head, boy, this is joyful academia, you know, to go in deep, man, and right, just find out, gobble it up, all that there is. But there's also something to this beautiful process that you've honed over the course of your career, your facility with words, and the way you place and articulate thoughts and feelings. And we're just so grateful for spending time with you today. Will you come back on the show and we'll talk some more?
Oh, I would love to. Just let me know, and this has been very enjoyable for me, and I would love to revisit with you again at some point in the future. Just let me know.
Boy, same here. J. Chester Johnson, renowned poet and the author of Auden, The Psalms, and Me. Go to Amazon and order it, or go to the website, www.chesterjohnson.com. The Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network, AM/FM stations all across America. News, weather, traffic, sports, the upcoming close on Wall Street are all straight ahead.